Commander-in-Chief Joe Biden will also be Comforter-in-Chief on Monday when he and the First Lady travel to Hawaii to support wildfire-traumatized residents.
I've spoken to Governor Josh Green multiple times and reassured him the state will have everything it needs from the federal government.
Plus, Russia continues attacks aimed at sabotaging Ukraine's grain exports.
Putin simply does not care about global food security. Such actions by the Kremlin negatively affect Ukrainian farmers and all those around the world who are most vulnerable to food insecurity.
And are Donald Trump's mounting legal problems helping him in his efforts to win back the presidency? Today is Thursday, August 17th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Good morning, I'm Lori London in Washington. A week after an apocalyptic wildfire ravaged the resort town of Lahaina, traumatized residents on the Hawaiian island of Maui are growing weary as many are still awaiting news of their missing loved ones.
You get all this wind blowing and now you get a fire, it just that was fuel, and just in a matter of minutes, that whole place was just engulfed.
With the death toll rising to 110, a mobile morgue with coroners, pathologists, and technicians has arrived to help with the grim task of sorting through remains. As many as 1,000 people remain unaccounted for.
All that area they got to plow up. They can't do it now because they don't know how many bodies. They don't know what's left. Imagine being a mom or dad, wondering where your child is. Imagine being a husband or wife, a mother or father. It's really tough stuff.
President Biden and First Lady Jill Biden will travel to Hawaii on Monday to provide comfort and support. As Associated Press correspondent Sagar Magani reports, the Federal Emergency Management Agency is on the ground as well, taking steps to help in the recovery.
Administrator Deanne Criswell says the agency has opened its first disaster recovery center on the island, housing multiple agencies.
Where people can register for assistance and help get some, and get additional support.
Criswell says search and recovery efforts continue in Lahaina, and more dogs are being sent to help their exhausted comrades.
They have to deal with issues with their paws, walking through glass and debris. And in these conditions, the dogs require frequent rest.
Criswell spoke at the White House after briefing President Biden, who plans to visit Maui with the First Lady Monday.
He's going to be able to bring hope.
Sagar Magani, Washington.
The United States is condemning Russia's continued attacks on Ukraine's grain infrastructure following fresh assaults on Ukrainian facilities at a port on the Danube River in the Odessa region. State Department Deputy Spokesperson Vedant Patel in a news briefing Wednesday noted this is a vital wartime route for food exports.
Putin simply does not care about global food security. Such actions by the Kremlin negatively affect Ukrainian farmers and all those around the world who are most vulnerable to food insecurity. Russia's attacks on Ukrainian port infrastructure facilities have destroyed hundreds of thousands of Ukraine's grain bound for global markets. In the meantime, though, we're working with partners in Europe to identify other potential options to possibly find ways and corridors in which we can continue to get grain to the places it needs to go.
Ukrainian officials posted photos of destroyed storage facilities and piles of scattered grain and sunflowers. Meanwhile, Lithuania, a NATO member with a population of nearly 3 million, is beefing up its border security because of the presence of Wagner Group mercenaries in Belarus. VOA Eastern Europe Bureau Chief Miroslava Gungadze visited the Lithuania-Belarusian border and has this report.
Since Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine, the NATO neighbors of Belarus, Poland, Lithuania, and Latvia have been building up their border defenses. Ruslanas, who does not reveal his last name for security reasons, is an officer of the Lithuanian Border Guard unit. He's getting ready to go on patrol. While he's well-equipped to guard this NATO border, even he finds his job difficult.
It's not easy job. It's not for everyone. It's not just physically, and it's mentally as well.
In the past 2 years, he and his colleagues have dealt with provocations from Belarus, including border violations such as Belarus' decision to send illegal migrants into Lithuania.
We saw it and how they was pushing them and immigrants as well. They was telling us same stories. They didn't allow them to come back.
After Wagner Group mercenaries arrived in Belarus, Lithuania reinforced its military presence even further. Authorities are planning for threats that include the infiltration migration of hostile migrants, cross-border shootings, or a repeat of recent Belarusian helicopters violating Polish airspace. The commander of Lithuania's State Border Guard Service assessed the situation.
I would probably say that the situation is stable, however very tense, because we can see that Belarus is actively participating in the aggression against Ukraine, and the security situation in our region is very tense.
Lyubayeva told VOA the war in Ukraine has impacted his country's approach to national security.
It drastically, the mentality changed the perception of the security situation by the public as well as by the law enforcement community. From our perspective, speaking about border guards, we started to pay much more attention to the national security issues. The State Border Guard Service became part of the National Defense Forces in case of military conflict, in case of aggression.
He says Lithuania and other NATO members bordering Belarus and Russia are cooperating closely in case of further provocations. The authorities are closely watching the so-called Savalki Gap, a stretch of land running 100 kilometers along the Polish-Lithuanian border between Russia's Kaliningrad enclave and Belarus. Poland and three Baltic states have reinforced their military presence at this border and put them on high alert. In the coming days, Lithuania plans to close two of its crossing points with Belarus. The head of the Lithuanian Border Guard Service told VOA he does not think that Belarus, in coordination with the Kremlin, is ready to start the war with NATO in the foreseeable future. However, the Lithuanians believe they must be ready to face any provocation that may occur. Miroslava Gongadze, VOA News, on Lithuania's border with Belarus.
Niger's junta on Wednesday said 17 of its soldiers were killed in an ambush by insurgents, the deadliest attack since a July 26 coup, whose leaders have cited persistent insecurity as a justification for deposing the civilian government. This as trade between Nigeria and Niger has been halted because of sanctions due to the coup. As Al-Hassan Bala reports from a border town in Nigeria, the sanctions are already having an impact on people's lives.
For 2 weeks, Bilia Issa has been one of many drivers forced to park their trucks loaded with goods in Magamajibia, Nigeria, near the border with Niger. The continued border closure is due to sanctions imposed on Niger by the international community and the regional bloc, the Economic Community of West African States, or ECOWAS, because of Niger's July coup. Nigerian officials say the closure could result in losses of $226 million.
I have been at this border for almost 15 days. The commodities I am carrying will spoil if the closure reaches next month. I have no money with me right now. Friends here provide food for me.
The usual bustle in this community has been hindered by the insecurity in Niger and the sanctions that followed. Abdelkader Sani is a shop owner who sells food and basic supplies. He says some people no longer open their shops due to low demand.
Patronage is at its lowest level. I am not even talking about it because people come to the shop to borrow money to eat.
Another shop owner, Muhammad Adamu, says the sanctions have caused commodities prices to skyrocket.
The cost of living has soared. We in Nigeria border communities seem to be more affected by the sanctions than people in Nigeria.
Nigerian inflation has been rising for years and currently sits at nearly 23%. That is putting some commodities beyond the reach of the poor, according to the country's National Bureau of Statistics. Bashir Adeniyi, acting Comptroller General of the Nigerian Customs Service, insists the border closure is it's worth the financial risks given the security concerns.
Sometimes you also have to look at the other side of it, and that is the fact that for this economic relations to thrive, you also need to frame them within an atmosphere of peace and security.
With the ECOWAS activating its standby force, residents of these border community are not only concerned about their livelihood, but also their safety and security. Al-Hassan Bala, VOA News, Magamajibia, Nigeria.
Here are some of the other stories we're following from around the world. North Korea has publicly confirmed for the first time that it is holding U.S. soldier Travis King, who ran into the north side of the joint security area in the demilitarized zone nearly a month ago, becoming the first known tourist to do so. A Guatemalan anti-corruption candidate is heavily favored to win the presidency in Sunday's runoff vote, suggesting the country could be heading toward a new era after years of democratic backsliding. Germany's cabinet is set to approve a plan to liberalize rules on cannabis, setting the scene for the European Union's most populous member to decriminalize possession of limited amounts of the substance and allow members of cannabis clubs to buy it for recreational purposes. This is VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
In March 2022, the Hubble Space Telescope found, with the help of an astronomical effect called gravitational lensing, the farthest star that has been seen so far. The star is nicknamed Arendelle, and it took 12.9 billion years for its light to reach Hubble. But since the universe has been expanding at a rapid rate, the star is now 28 billion light-years from Earth and located in the Sunrise Arc galaxy. Now, NASA's Webb Space Telescope has focused on Arendelle to learn more about this ancient star. Webb's observations reveal that the star is classed as a massive B-type star. It is more than twice as hot and about a million times brighter than our Sun. Based only on its colors, scientists may have seen clues that Arendelle also has a cool and red companion star. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Lori London. As Donald Trump's legal problems mount with yet another indictment this week in the state of Georgia, he's betting that the mounting charges will help him win back the presidency. Some opinion surveys confirm he's right, while others suggest Trump has real vulnerabilities going into the general election. VOA's senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports.
This week in Fulton County, Georgia, District Attorney Fannie Willis announced the fourth indictment for former President Donald Trump. This time, in connection with charges he attempted to overturn his 2020 election loss in that state to then-Democratic candidate Joe Biden. Speaking at a campaign rally in early August in Montgomery, Alabama, Trump called the indictments ridiculous and said they would only boost support for him.
Every time they file an indictment, we go way up in the polls. We need one more indictment to close out this election. One more indictment, and this election is closed out. Nobody has even a chance.
According to an Associated Press North Center for Public Affairs research survey conducted before the Georgia indictments were returned, 74% of Republicans say they would support Trump in November 2024. But 53% of all Americans surveyed say they definitely would not support him, and another 11% say they probably would not support him in November 2024. Trump is also facing indictments in Washington, New York, and Florida. This might be a liability for most candidates, but not necessarily for Trump. Anthony Michael Kreis is an associate law professor at Georgia State University. He spoke to VOA via Zoom.
I would not be surprised if we see Donald Trump take advantage of this process and attempt to use it to gin up additional media coverage, because in many respects, his presidential campaign at this point is the trial in Fulton County. It is, you know, it is the trial in D.C., and it's the other trials in New York and Florida as well.
Another expert told VOA he is concerned that most Republican leaders have failed to condemn Trump and distance themselves from him over charges he sought to overturn the 2020 election results. Larry Sabato is a veteran political analyst with the University of Virginia.
If Republicans saddle the country with Donald Trump as their nominee, then anything can happen, especially because the Democrats will have an 82-year-old or an almost 82-year-old incumbent running for another term, with all due respect to him, and I hope he lives to 100.
Some Americans say age is a concern with both leading candidates. Biden is 80 and Trump is 77 years old. Trump's former Vice President Mike Pence is also competing for the Republican nomination. He says Trump tried to get him to overturn the election results in the run-up to the January 6, 2021 attack on the U.S. Capitol.
And then on that day, President Trump asked me to put him over the Constitution. But I chose the Constitution, and I always will. And I really do believe that anyone who puts themselves over the Constitution should never be president of the United States.
Trump is seeking to delay the trials until after the 2024 election. But some experts say it would serve voters to know whether he is found innocent or guilty, especially on the charges related to attempting to stop the peaceful transfer of power for the first time in American history. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
Amid growing concerns about China and North Korea, President Biden will host the leaders of Japan and South Korea at Camp David on Friday. The trilateral summit is expected to result in joint initiatives on defense, technology, and economic security to bolster cooperation between Washington and its two Asian allies. VOA White House Bureau Chief Patty Wiedekuswara has this report.
North Korea's ballistic missile and nuclear program, China's more muscular presence in the Indo-Pacific, and growing ties between Pyongyang, Moscow, and Beijing provide a backdrop to the upcoming trilateral summit between the U.S., Japan, and South Korea. Picking up from their May meeting in Japan, the leaders will convene this Friday at Camp David, a presidential retreat near Washington that has hosted foreign leaders in the past. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken.
You'll see some very concrete measures that we're taking to enhance our capacity to provide for our security as three countries and also more broadly security in the Indo-Pacific region.
The measures are expected to include an enhanced early warning system against North Korean missiles, extended nuclear deterrence, and increased military exercises and cybersecurity cooperation. It's a remarkable milestone in the historically complicated relationship between Seoul and its former colonizer Tokyo. South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol.
Korea and Japan are now partners who share universal values and pursue common interests.
Cooperation to block semiconductor exports to China and other economic security issues will also be a focus. Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson Wang Wenbin.
China opposes relevant countries forming cliques of all kinds, as well as their practices of exacerbating confrontation and jeopardizing other countries' strategic security.
Friday's summit will be key in the Biden administration's push for more institutionalized cooperation that would continue despite changes in leadership among the three allies. Patsy Wiedekuswara, VOA News, Washington.
The start of the rainy season in Sudan and neighboring Chad is making it difficult to deliver aid to refugees from Sudan's war. In this report from the Chadian town of Adenor, reporter Henry Wilkins looks at some of the logistical challenges faced by those trying to deliver aid and talks to experts about how Sudan's failed planting season means a desperate food emergency could likely get even worse.
Mohamed Kames fled western Darfur, where rights groups say atrocities against civilians are taking place around 2 months ago. He arrived in Adamor, Chad, close to the Sudan border, where he thought he would be safe.
After the floods, homes were inundated.
Sudan and Chad's rainy season peaks in August and September. It's making access to Adamor very difficult for aid groups. VOA was only able to reach the refugee site in amphibious all-terrain vehicles operated by the UN. Conventional vehicles carrying food aid to Adamor become stuck in thick mud, attempts to rescue them unsuccessful. Ibrahim Mohamed Abdallah, a refugee who arrived 2 weeks ago, says the isolation in Adamor makes him frightened.
We have no security. We have no remain there alone. We need help. I don't want to stay there because here is also it's very dangerous. My children.
Lack of access is not the only problem the rainy season brings. Humanitarians say its arrival also marks a grim milestone for Sudan. David Del Conte is a humanitarian and policy consultant who works with aid group Refugees International.
For much of Sudan, and the planting season is over. All along the River Nile would be the planting season for much of the country's staples. So the situation in Sudan is such that we have a problem today that will be much bigger tomorrow.
Khartoum and its surrounding area, which sits at the confluence of the Blue and White Nile rivers, has been rocked by fighting between the Sudanese military and the paramilitary rapid support forces, making it almost impossible for farmers to plant. To add to his woes, members of Mohamed Karmis's family are still unaccounted for. He does not know if they were able to escape Sudan, if they are alive or dead. He says he is still searching for his aunts and brothers.
We have been unable to locate them.
For the refugees of Adamor, the unfolding tragedy, at least for the moment, has no end in sight. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Adamor, Chad.
For a deaf-blind person, the combination of vision and hearing loss can make for a confined and isolating existence. A startup in the U.S. state of Boston is developing a robot to expand communication and access to information. VOA's Tina Trin has more.
Samantha Johnson knows tactile sign language, a version of sign language used by some in the deafblind community.
Deafblind people communicate through tactile signing, also known as hand-over-hand signing. So the deafblind person holds onto the back of the hand of the signer and receives the signs into their palm directly.
When the pandemic struck, Johnson wondered what it meant for those who rely on the touch-based method of communication.
Because interpreting services stopped, social distancing was in place, and millions of deafblind Americans didn't have access to communication.
She and her team of engineers at Tatum Robotics came up with the Tatum T1, a robotic hand that can sign letters of the American Sign Language alphabet.
Our goal is to develop the first assistive communication tool for the deafblind community that prioritizes tactile signs. It's currently made with all flexible components, which kind of serves two purposes. Not only does it really mimic a human hand, so it's really easy for the deafblind person to acclimate to its signing, but it's also really safe.
Johnson says the T1 will connect to the cloud to translate any text-based content.
So that could be emails, websites, ebooks, and what it does is it will take that content, it will translate it out of English and into ASL, and then output it for the deafblind user.
Jamie Lard is completely deaf and has very little vision. She relies on tactile signing and an interpreter to communicate. In the absence of an interpreter, the T1 can serve as a stand-in and translate words typed into a connected laptop.
It said, "Hi, my name is Tina."
It's still in development, but Johnson hopes the device will ultimately provide greater independence and connection.
The deafblind person's at home, they're very isolated. They don't have access to entertainment or their community the way that we take advantage of.
Technology that can truly be a helping hand. Tina Trin, VOA News, Boston.
You've been listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Until next time, I'm Lori London in Washington. Take good care and have a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Today, we are experiencing a global hunger crisis of unprecedented proportions. According to the World Food Program, in just 2 years, the number of people facing or at risk of acute food insecurity increased from 135 million in 53 countries to 345 million in 79 countries in 2023. Two major events are driving this crisis. According to Carrie Fowler, the United States State Department Special Envoy for Global Food Security. Climate is certainly one of them, said Dr. Fowler. We've had 532 consecutive months in which the global average temperature for the month exceeded the 20th century average. What's worse, for the past 2 years, we have benefited from the La Niña cooling weather phenomenon. But in 2023, we lost that advantage.
We're now going into an El Niño period, a warming trend that typically affects tropical countries more than temperate countries. In other words, this is not business as usual for agriculture.
Russia's war in Ukraine is the second major driver of food insecurity, particularly Vladimir Putin's decision to pull out of the Black Sea Grain Initiative, said Dr. Fowler. What are the impacts on the degrading Ukrainian agriculture and export by Russia?
The top 15 importers of Ukrainian grain are a number of developing countries with quite high percentages of childhood stunting. The majority of countries on Earth are, in fact, net food importers. 131 out of 196 countries are net food importers.
Countries in the global south really need our help in terms of developing their agricultural food systems. They need strengthened food security, said Dr. Fowler. One of the more promising possibilities is the Vision for Adapted Crops and Soils program, co-sponsored by the Food and Agricultural Organization of the UN and the African Union, said Dr. Fowler.
We're working with African governments to identify the traditional and indigenous crops that have the most potential for adding to nutrition in Africa. We are assessing how they are likely to perform in climate-changed Africa, which we can see already. And this will provide the basis for our working with African countries in crop improvement programs for those crops.
We're taking a long view of trying to address the food insecurity problems, said Dr. Fowler. We do not need to be taking grain and food off of markets. We need to be helping countries strengthen their food security.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.